This is an interview that I did with author Kirsty Clements. She just released her second book, Impressive, and it is a guide to a career in fashion or luxury. Kirsty was very kind to take about 20 minutes to answer my questions, and I think you'll find it inspiring. I know that I really enjoyed speaking to her. Start with the most impressive people you've met, and by that I mean in the industry.
Good question. I would say a lot of the people that I have interviewed in the book and who I've pulled quotes out of, you know, they're people that I've worked with for more than 20 years, 25 years, and for me that they're really some of the industry's leading players, you know, and I grew up with them and I learned from them and I continue to learn from them. So, you know, very much the people that I quoted in my book, you know, I even felt like when I was interviewing them that I was still learning things. So I guess it's those people that you realise you've been through a couple of decades with and they're still there. And you have people that have always treated you with respect and paid back favours and vice versa. You know, it kind of becomes something that you get with longevity. And then on the other side, there are just those people sometimes that you meet them and, you know, they either want something from you or you have a meeting and they leave and that thought pops into your head, which is why I called the book that, where you just think they were impressive, you know, that was impressive. And yeah. And that can be anybody. That can be a young kid coming in for an interview or an intern or anybody, someone who serves you, anybody, you know. I guess I don't put impressive just because you're famous or you're, you know, in the industry. It's about your general sense of behaviour, yeah.
Well, that was part of my next question, which is what personality traits and qualities really define an impressive person?
I think positivity, yeah. You know, and I think that spirit of can do, you know, that idea that when you ask somebody to do something and they go, of course, of course, 1,000%, you know, I think that there's I think positivity and generosity of spirit is actually works on every level, from a work level to a personal level, you know, about and I guess a level of kindness, you know, rather than that sort of, yeah, I think being kind is important, whether you're a boss or wherever you are on the scale.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Having empathy for the people around you and not thinking you're a superstar, I think is important. You know, and a level of emotional intelligence that I often see in women, you know, which I think is a real positive, as opposed to just being completely project-driven, but actually understanding teamwork.
Well, in the magazine and media and fashion industries in particular, it's quite cutthroat, especially now when they're being run by such major corporations. I mean, do you see that women take on very masculine characteristics just to survive?
I think sometimes they have to. I think depending on the roles that they're put into, it's changed a lot, you know, because it used to be that the, you know, women were in the editor-in-chief and that you had men over in the money division and never the twain meet, you know, and the editor didn't need to worry about the bottom line. I mean, I'm talking a long time ago.
Yeah.
And now you definitely have to have all of those hats. I think that it's such a precarious industry that's not bringing out the best in people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that, like when I went into, that you think you're going to be there for 20 years and you're going to, you know, gradually build your way to the top.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's that feeling there now, and I think maybe that's made it a little more cutthroat.
There appears to be a little less old-fashioned loyalty. It just appears that... and as a long-time fashion magazine lover, I really notice it, that writers or designers or editors jump from one publication to another. And for me, that's quite new. As a teenager growing up, it was very much, this writer is with this publication.
Yeah, oh yes, and you stayed forever and you loved it, and that was a culture, you know. Mm. You had a culture, and I think now they're owned by bigger companies, so they're sort of cultures within cultures. But there is a lot of change, and it's not just to do it's to do with the financial landscape, and it's also got to do with the internet and that changing everything, and the power of the new style influencers as well. So, you know, it's in just even since I've left Vogue, the rapid change of the landscape in the last 2.5 to 3 years is quite extraordinary. You know, so I feel like that engenders a different sort of working environment for sure. For sure.
I also have to ask. Look, as a pretty outspoken person, but also a passionate writer and someone who has tried to get into fashion magazines and PR in the past, not very successfully, obviously, I wonder, you know, is there still a place for the creative and the maverick sort of women, you know, watching September issue and Grace Coddington and, you know, Susie Menkes with a massive quiff and Anna Piaggi. I mean, these are all women who might not, you know, sit in an interview and behave perfectly and have their nails and lipstick perfect as is suggested in your book. I mean, yeah. Is there still a place for those women?
Oh, I definitely think there is, but I think, you know, you're talking about women who are at another stage of their career, and probably when they went into it, they presented in a different way. But I don't think, when I say that, you know, there's a certain amount of polish that you have to show in an interview, I don't mean that it's a cookie cutter thing and that you have to look conservative and you have to look, I don't think it's that. It's not exactly that I'm trying to say. I think it's, you know, because I was always, if you were dressed head to toe in anything, and I think Laura Brown did the same thing, if it wasn't, someone was all too fashiony and crazy, that it sort of put you off. You really wanted to see their personality.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately things have to speak through their work. So, you know, you have to speak through your work. And that's, you know, if you look at bloggers nowadays and you wonder, can you be a blogger if you're not beautiful? Mm. You know, that's like, do those differences exist, which is what you're saying, can the maverick, I definitely think so. If you are a brilliant writer, you are a brilliant writer.
Not so much beauty as just having a very unusual maybe style or just being willing to, you know, to say things that people don't necessarily agree with. I know, you know, Catherine Horan not all that long ago revealed Galliano before they'd actually announced it, and there was a big ruckus about that. I mean, you know, writers and editors who are willing to come out and say things that aren't necessarily going to do their careers any favours.
I guess it depends on what are you a lone wolf, or are you working for a company? Because if you're working for a company, you have to actually abide by their whatever that company culture and those company rules are. Mm. Also, people like Kathy Horan or Susie Menkes, they earned their stripes to get out there and say those things. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference between Kathy Horan saying something that there is between someone who just comes up and it's an opinion. It's not an educated opinion. It's not a... I know what you're saying. Are you not allowed to say anything to break the mould? I get that. Mm. But there's also a certain amount of... this is what people complain about. This is what I think my book was trying to address, is that there needs to be some credentials. There needs to be some runs on the board before you become the oracle of all things, you know?
Look, as a blogger, I'm very aware that, you know, there's a million and one bloggers out there. I suppose, I mean, my blog is not specifically fashion. It's more a lifestyle thing, and it's very much a project of passion rather than, you know, a money spinner or, you know, something that's going to get me tickets to the front row of anything. Not at all. But I do see a lot of that, and I did. I've always been extremely passionate about fashion because it's an amazing creative expression, and I entered a competition in 2013. For Sports Girl, and I was able to go to the Melbourne Fashion Festival and sit in the front row, and I was massively excited about the concept of it, And I remember rocking up and it was just, the whole front row was just taking photos of each other, you know, gulping down champagne. And I was sort of stuck there and my heart just dropped. I just went, what is this? It's sort of a great big, you know, I think they'd have been much happier having mirrors directly in front of each other than...
Yeah.
Than the show, you know, is that where it's going?
Well, see, festival is different to when you used to think of a fashion week or the runway shows that are on at the moment overseas. That used to be a trade thing. So you went there if you were trade. You know, you were reporting, you were filing, you were editing, you were judging. And then the fashion festivals are really, they actually are more about girls getting dressed up, having a glass of champagne, you know, looking at each other, looking at the clothes, because that's trying to drive sales into the stores.
Right.
So a festival is completely different to a fashion week. But fashion weeks have turned into, looks to me a little bit like festivals, because a lot of it now is so much more what you are wearing and what you're wearing in the front row than what you are actually looking at. Mm-hmm. Or someone just sitting in the front row and going, that dress was awesome, and getting 700,000 hits, you know, because they've got a million things. So they actually coexist.
Yeah.
So there is the person who says that dress is awesome and gets 700,000 hits because they're pretty and they have a blog. And then there is your Kathy Horan or your Tim Blanks or your Sarah Mowers or, you know, who are reviewing it, filing it, you know, have 20, 30 years of comparisons to make, backstage interviews. It's a whole different ballgame. They coexist and it's up to the consumer to decide which one they feel is more valid. Going back to your question, which is, this is my first interview about the book, so I find that really interesting. Like, is there room for a maverick? There is room for a maverick, yes, but you still have to have the credentials that back up your opinion, because everybody has an opinion. You know, there is no one, we are not short of opinions on anything.
Yeah.
But I think the real maverick has a point of view, has some information behind that, has some education behind that, has studied that, has knowledge about, has firsthand. It's not just an opinion, you know, that's not being a maverick, that's just being smarter.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that's definitely not something that I find attractive. I very much do like a woman with an authenticity.
A robot, you know, saying, you know, that a dress, I understand that, but I think your maverick's really in your head, you know. That's a real maverick in producing that work. It's not actually how they're dressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. So what takes up your time now? What are you doing?
I'm consulting into various people. I mean, I only really finished the book in November, so I gave myself a bit of a break. I've spent all year on that, really. And I'm consulting on the sort of custom publishing side into various fashion houses. And this is huge. I mean, I think this book, I'll probably be out in the speaking circuit quite a lot, and doing mentoring and things like that. So changed it up completely. I haven't gone back into publishing. I feel like I'll probably write more books. It's like self-publishing, sort of endless self-publishing, and it's good to get out there and talk to consumers and to readers and to fans and see what it is that they want and make projects that can be directed towards that, you know, because I think it's very important to find an audience rather than stick something out there and hope there is one. I think it's good to get out there and listen.
What happens as far as books? I mean, how much of it is your complete idea and how much of it is the publisher saying, what about this?
Oh, no, it's my complete idea. Mm. And luckily I have this wonderful publisher who gave me a 3-book deal and I have this wonderful editor. She's edited each of my books and she just goes, yeah, that's great, do it.
Who is your editor?
Sally Heath.
Sally Heath, okay.
Yeah, it's been a really, like, they're just a wonderful publishing house because I say, I feel like this is a goal and they're like, that's a great idea, let's go with it, you know, and then just give me sort of encouragement more than anything else on the way through, which is really great. So I think as long as you keep, you got to hit a nail on the head that may be commercial, you know, have an idea that's commercial. It's a really great way to communicate.
Do you have any ideas around your next publication?
Yeah, I want to see how this one goes at the beginning. Like I said to you, when you get out on the tours and you start talking to people and you really isolate what people would like to read, what they, you know, what's coming next in a way, which was what I always did with magazines, is you've got to get out there and talk to people to see what's on the horizon. But I've got a semi-idea of a follow-up, a next book, but I don't know about doing it this year because they take a lot of time and that's all it's all you can do.
Sure.
You have to work hard on them, and I've got other projects that I've got to make a living.
Of course.
So, you've got to kind of divide your time.
How hard was it to find consulting work, and do you find it satisfying?
Yeah, I do actually find it satisfying. And it takes a lot, I think, to find the right mix, but I guess what I realised with consulting work is not so much... You don't need to go and do the thinking for everybody because there is a whole, new group of people that are in there. It's really about you going in and saying where you made mistakes and where the potential to make a mistake may be. And I think that's a really important part of consultancy is, I just sit there and I think of all the things that I've done wrong. And actually I think that's what you bring to the table, weirdly, because you can guide people into not making those same, errors.
So what elements of the team do you work with as far as consulting?
Oh, I work with... I mean, I'm basically in the creative process, so I'm consulting at the moment to Bauer and I'm across Meyer and Westfield, so it's creative concepts and putting teams together, which is what I used to do at Vogue, really. So
yes.
That's the fun bit. That's the ultra-fun bit.
Great. So can you get me a role at Bauer?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what I was trying to let people know in this book, fashion's been marketed at a generation for a good 10 years now, and every young girl would come up to me and say, "I want to be the editor of Vogue. I want to work at a fashion magazine." And I don't know if that's going to happen. I think the landscape's changing so much that I think they have to rethink their goals a little bit and
Absolutely.
Actually really understand what that looks like. Because most staffs at fashion magazines are a quarter of what they used to be 10 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of it's done by interns. It's a different field out there, and I think that a lot of the time, whatever that passion is that you've got, you should drill down in it and try and work out other areas it may be used, whether you need to start your own business, whether you need to get some like-minded people together and start your own digital business.
Yeah.
But don't think of that walking into a print fashion magazine or fashion magazine is what it was 10 years ago.
God, no. I really had to think about it and I've accepted that I love writing. I love writing and I love sharing ideas, and really any role that allows me to do that is something that I would put my heart into.
Yeah. It's just unfortunately, we've just seen all of the major things that we would have gone towards 10 to 15 years ago, whether it was Fairfax or News or, whatever, or Vogue or this or that or that. It's all in such a state of flux. I think, it has to look, you have to look digitally and look at things like the HuffPost just about to launch and things like that, where 90%, it's different days. I mean, those fashion magazines that the girls are all dreaming about,
Having said that, it looks to me, and I might be wrong, that HuffPo is actually going to be syndicating their material.
Oh, they're hiring a lot of people.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Hiring them in Sydney, I imagine.
Yeah.
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 So, it's just, and I understand I had the same thing with you when I was young, is that I wanted to write, but the solid industries to head towards, mastheads to head towards, that you felt like, I could work there for 20 years, and it's tricky now.
Yeah.
It's really tricky.
Yeah.
But I think that things will just regroup. I don't want to be a downer because I think that there'll be some good entrepreneurs that come up with great digital platforms that everybody can use their talents there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I'm just trying to dispel the myth that the perfume corridors of, paper giants is not what it used to be.
No, absolutely not. So tell me, have you got events lined up in Melbourne at the moment?
Going through that because I wanted to do rather than one big party, I'm going to do some small targeted events to bloggers and to potentially RMIT and just, you know, books, like just smaller groups of people who are keen. So I'll get my publicist to let you know what that would be. I mean, hopefully I'll be doing a lot of national touring, I would hope. And I'm doing Writers Festival and Sydney Writers Festival in May.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, things just crop up because, you know, I've learnt. I mean, I launched the Vogue Factory in one big launch sort of and then a few little ones, whereas this one I think I can go for a couple of months and do lots of small, you know, meet and greets and cups of tea and, like, you know, really get and talk to people because, like I said to you, that's what I want to do. It's a different thing because it's a non-fiction book. It's not a novel or anything, so it is about communicating.
Will any of the people who are quoted in Impressive be attending with you these events?
I don't know. I thought about it. It'd be great to do a seminar and have a few of those people up on stage, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to see a panel.
Yeah, like people who are in the luxury, you know, running luxury businesses and what they look for. It's interesting. It was interesting to me to see how much they had very similar viewpoints. But, again, it would be great to have a panel where people could, you know, skew beauty questions towards someone or PR questions towards someone else or running your own business questions towards someone else. So that would be something I'd be really, I'm a lone agent, so I've just got to run, you know, I've got so much to do and I've just got to day by day kind of tick off the list.
Yeah, well, possibly handball some of that to the publicist. She's going to love me for saying that.
Yes.
Well, look, again, thank you very much for speaking with me, and I really did genuinely enjoy reading Impressive, and I look forward to attending an event. If I do get an invitation, I will certainly show my interest to the publicist.
Thank you. Can I just ask you a question? What part of the book did you find the most informative or the most useful
look,
to you?
I quit a job in December because I was being bullied by my female manager, my confidence just took a nosedive trying to find work again and going through the whole rigmarole of interview after interview and, oh, you're shortlisted and, oh, we love your enthusiasm and then nothing. It's just been hideous. You know, for my personal and my professional confidence, left me in fetal position some nights. But I suppose when I was reading the book, reading about the non-mentor and the idea that you will meet people in roles of immense power that are behaving in a way that is completely, you know, against your own values and expectations, and in fact rather than going off and having a cry about it, you've just got to say, well, that's not how I would do things and I'm richer for recognizing that.
I think for what I mean, definitely I only got bullied seriously once. You know, I mean, I was probably pushed around a bit at various points, but I was only bullied, really actively bullied once. And I remember going through it thinking, why don't I know what I'm learning? I don't know what this lesson is exactly, you know.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he was fired, so I won in the end. But I remember thinking, okay, well, I've seen it, but I'll never let it happen to me again. So you only need to go through it once, you know. And I think the idea is just to recognise that it's happening to you. You're not complicit in it. It's them doing it to you, and you only need to learn that lesson once, and don't ever let anybody do it to you again. And you know, ultimately, if they're not moving on, and you got to look around and go, maybe they're not. They're important for other reasons. Then you need to move on. But it's because it's terrible that your confidence not like that day after day.
Well, look, I had a meeting with a manager of an associated centre who did my exit interview, and it took me a couple of months to be able to do that exit interview. I just was not in a state where I could even talk about it, and she said, look, ultimately all you need to know is that people get their comeuppance in the end at somewhere along the line. It might be you know, they're going to pay for it in some way, you know, whether or not they lose their job,
Yes.
In their own lives, if they are behaving in the manner that this woman was behaving, there's just, you know, there's just no way that she won't get some sort of feedback from it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting feedback. Thank you.
Oh, look, that was not, that was what was most relevant for me at this moment. But I also very much loved, you know, reading Mary Chu's, you know, experiences at Armani, and I did love reading the designers who had said something that they later regretted, or, you know, people admitting that making a mistake is just a necessary evil of the profession.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. Thank you very
Have
much.
A wonderful Monday, and I do look forward to your events in Melbourne.
Okay, and I'll make sure that Monica sends you an invite.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kat.
Bye, Kirsty.